My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always good to have you with us.
It's always good to be here. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, John, you're road tripping for the 2012 Republican presidential campaign is still in high gear. This last week you were in Michigan, which was the much tighter of the contests. Mitt Romney won in both Michigan and Arizona, but it was very much in doubt until pretty late into the evening on Monday. Rick Santorum made a spirited effort, but in the end, Romney wins. They essentially split the delegates. But how much more important, perhaps, is the momentum than the 50-50 split in delegates?
The momentum is very significant, even more so because at the end, the major story of the race was how Democrats were urging their loyalists to come over and vote for Santorum as a means of wounding and embarrassing Mitt Romney, Michigan's favorite son. And Senator Santorum did nothing to discourage this. There were reports he robocalls to voters were telling them that they could vote in the Republican primary and not lose their Democratic identity and be able to participate in Democratic caucuses that choose delegates later in the year. Now, while people like to see crossover voting, there is also a strong animosity about people coming in and raiding another party with the intention of wreaking mischief. And this caused a lot of problems for Mr. Santorum at the end, and the fact he did not repudiate the crossover may well have hurt him. In addition, some of his comments, notably saying that John Kennedy's famous speech about his faith to the Houston ministers made him want to throw up, were not helpful. Mitt Romney won, but as he said, it was a close race, but it was enough. And that's what's important. And certainly the momentum he's received from this bode well for him on Super Tuesday next week when 10 states will choose their delegates.
Well, let's break that down now. That's obviously a big day. Well over 400 delegates at stake. Newt Gingrich has already said his campaign lives or dies on whether he wins his one of his home states of Georgia. He certainly represented Georgia when he's in the House of Representatives. So let's break this down, John. What are the expectations? What's Romney expected to win? What are Santorum and Gingrich expected to win, or maybe even Ron Paul? And what are the key battlegrounds?
It would be surprising if Ron Paul won anything outside of Alaska and possibly Idaho, both of which are caucus states that he does better in than primaries, and both of which have a history of being very friendly to libertarians. Alaska has even elected registered libertarians to the state legislature. Mitt Romney should win Virginia, where he and Ron Paul are the only candidates on the ballot, and in a number of the other states that day, his home state of Massachusetts and Vermont, he's considered the easy winner. Newt Gingrich should win his home state of Georgia, which is the big casino, having the most delegates that day. Polls were showing him leading in Oklahoma, but this may have changed with Romney's new momentum, and polls showed him leading in Tennessee. Although his former Congressman Van Hillary told me he did not file enough delegates so that even if he wins, he will not get the delegates a winner normally would get. Rick Santorum goes into Super Tuesday wounded. He seems to be pinning all his hopes on a big win in Ohio, which is industrial, has a strong pocket of Catholics, and yes, the unions are urging a crossover vote to, quote, prolong the process for Republicans. My own guess, though, is I think Mitt Romney can win Ohio. He's unveiled endorsements, is drawing big crowds, and as you said, he came out of Michigan smoking. I think it will be a split, but the big winner in the end will be Romney in terms of delegates. And some of the other candidates will have to look really hard at continuing their campaigns.
John, let's talk about some other issues now, and let's start with overseas in Afghanistan and the big controversy over the apology. U.S. troops accidentally burning copies of the Quran, which had been confiscated from prisoners who were using them to pass messages back and forth between radicals. This revelation of the burning of the Qurans led to riots in Afghanistan, which has now, I believe, resulted in the deaths of at least a handful of U.S. soldiers. President Obama apologizing for that, and a lot of people not happy with that, including the Republican presidential candidates. What's the fallout from that?
Well, this was a question that just dominated the session I went to at the White House a week ago when Deputy Press Secretary Josh Ernst filled in for Jake Carney about the president's concern for national security and what he should do for the United States. And they pointed out George W. Bush had issued an apology for actions by U.S. troops nearly a decade ago. Now, that said, one has to wonder, Afghanistan has been a very fickle ally of the United States. President Karzai has long been accused of playing both sides against one another, trying to keep a friendly hand, palms open to the Taliban, while all the while seeming to be an ally of the U.S. As it tries to end terrorism once and for all. And many people think that President Obama, while his intentions were good, just went a little bit too far in apologizing, especially to people who are killing U.S. servicemen. Certainly, one can think it wouldn't put it past them to burn the Bible with what they say about the West and about Christianity. My guess is that this is an incident that will blow over, but President Obama, for whatever standing he had in the world, did not help himself at home. And I'm certainly say the Republican candidates are stumbling over each other to criticize him.
Last topic, John. Conservatives around the country here towards the end of the week stunned to wake up on Thursday morning and learn that conservative blogger Andrew Breitbart, one time helping to launch Huffington Post, then behind the Drudge Report for many years, and now behind BigGovernment.com, Breitbart.com, and just someone who loved the conservative fight, shockingly dies of what appears to be a heart attack at age 43. Your thoughts on him and his impact on politics?
I just saw Andrew Breitbart at CPAC only weeks ago, and of course I'm stunned by the results, stunned to find out what a young man he was, because he looked like someone who certainly put a lot of miles on. And that's a very fair assessment. For someone so young, he crammed a lot of living into his life and accomplished a lot. Very much like Drew Pearson, the muckraking columnist in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, Breitbart simply did not opine. He did not just do commentary. He actually looked for scandal and corruption and exposed it using the most modern techniques of the age of cyberspace journalism. Obviously, his bringing down of Acorn and exposing them for trying to take advantage of the tax code and other things was a major blow to the legal services, or should I say, community service avatar. And that put him on the map. Bringing down Congressman Anthony Weiner was another notch in his belt. I would say that whatever one thought of Andrew Breitbart, and there were people who did not like his tactics, and they considered it gotcha journalism, one has to say that he knew his craft well, and he was able to take advantage of its changing nature in the era of the 24/7 news source. He was a journalist of consequence, and he'll be missed.
John, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, as always, for being with us.
Morning, Andrew Breitbart. Looking forward to Super Tuesday. I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.